Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 101 of Season 3 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Dana Nachman, award-winning documentary director. Welcome back to the show, Dana.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's always fun having you on. You give great perspective on things, even if we're just talking about words on the screen. You know, you're good at that. Yeah. I guess you know, being a director and a producer helps you with that type of stuff.
Yes, and I actually hate words on screen because I'm a very bad speller. So it's always it scares me when I have to like triple check 1,000 times to make sure I'm not making any big spelling errors in my films.
Yeah, but I'm assuming it's someone else who's usually putting the words on the screen.
Yeah,
you're the one who has to check there. You have to check them.
Right. I'm not usually they originate with me, and then I'm the last word. So. I don't like either of those positions, but I have enough people now who are good at spelling on my team, so I'm covered.
Yes, that's why it sounds good to have a spell check.
Yes.
Someone actually sent me something really funny the other day that was dealing with spell check. Oh, I'm trying to remember. Maybe by the end of today's episode, I'll be able to find it and I'll read it. It was really funny because it's all about spell check, and it was quite funny. But who knows? You know, that's the problem when you get so many messages on your phone and stuff like that. You don't remember who sent you what joke.
No, not at all.
You know, you need to try and remember, you know, who sent what? Yeah. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Yeah, slight problems. What can you do? All right. So episode 101 begins with Al being confused by John's query and ends with Al explaining the effects of the trauma that he has gone through. Basically, as we ended things on Friday, John is in the process of taking shards of glass out of his feet. And as he's doing this, he's trying to, I guess, somewhat distract himself by talking to Al. And he asks him, you know, how come you're not on the street anymore? You know, what got you off the street? And then he says to him, he says, what is it, because you got flat feet? So on Friday, we discussed a little bit about what flat feet is. But basically, it continues with this minute where Al just says, what the hell are you talking about, man? Meaning, Al wasn't expecting it. If anything, you know, he was expecting something a little bit more, I guess, profound from John, because he doesn't know what John's going through. You know, this is just one of those things that John hasn't told anybody that he's dealing with all the glass in his feet. You know, he's talking about so many other things, but he just doesn't mention he talks about Twinkies, and he talks about the fact that he likes Roy Rogers, and that he's a fan of cowboys and things like that. And, you know, they've had other conversations throughout the course of the movie, but he never really mentions the fact that the physical trauma that he's dealing with right now.
Right.
You know, which goes back to, you know, the whole idea that this is basically a party line, you know, that anyone can hear what they're saying. So on the one hand, you know, he might not be discussing things because he doesn't want Hans to know that he's injured, but that hasn't stopped him from talking about some very strange things over the last, the last few minutes in the movie that he's been talking about things, you know, so something, and we'll get more into it this week. Also, some of the things they talk about, like this whole conversation, you know, everyone seems to forget that anybody can be listening to this. You know, it could be Theo, it could be Hans, it could be Argyle or Thornburg or anyone else for that matter could be listening to in on their conversation. And as soon as Al says this, what the hell are you talking about? So like, I don't know if you notice this, the music changes and it becomes more somber. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm assuming you've done that in some of your movies also, where you'll change the music or change the tone of the music to help play up certain scenes.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And stuff like that.
Yep.
You know, and they do that here too.
Yeah, they did it really brilliantly a few minutes from now too, when the power gets cut, but I don't want to jump forward. That was the biggest music moment, I think. so far in the movie. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean they've this movie has great music music stuff. I mean, if anyone wants to listen to Dana and my conversation about how music is chosen in movies and stuff like that, go back to, you know, the episodes that we did last season where we talked about music supervisor and all that stuff. I mean, you gave me so much insight into how that really works, you know, how you buy music and the difference between them and stuff like that. So anybody who wants to hear more detailed about that, you can go back and listen to season two and find the episodes that Dana and I spoke with. You know, we were on, we discussed it on minutes 88 or 89, you know, towards the end of the movie. So I have a feeling it was 88 that we talked about it, but I could be wrong. But you can go back and listen to both of them because they were both very fun episodes.
Yeah, you know.
I had a great time discussing
it. Good. Yeah, no, music's really fascinating. I mean, right now I'm on a jury for an organization in the U.S. called the IDA, which is the International Documentary Association.
Okay. I know what that is, actually. Yeah. I've heard of it. I actually get emails. I get emails from them all the time.
It's like probably it's the biggest, I would think, organization of documentaries maybe in the world. It's a big one. And I'm on the jury for score.
Well, it is international.
It is. and I'm on the jury for their awards this year for score. And it was interesting when they asked me to do score, you know, because, you know, it's a little bit of a tangent, but it's actually been so much fun. I've had like 12 films I've had to just analyze for the score rather, and it's kind of nice to only think about it in one. So it doesn't matter if you think the story structure is good or the, but just, you know, you could kind of hate the movie, but love the score. And it's been really fun.
Oh, wow. And you've had some of those?
Where
you've hated the movie but love the score?
The most recent one I watched.
You don't have to tell us which ones.
I'm not going to.
I don't need to know which ones.
Because it's so mean. Cool. But like,
that's top secret classified information that we don't have a need to know.
I mean, it's like crazy. It's a very, very difficult film. So, you know, if you're not in the mood for a difficult film, like then, you know, you don't really want to be watching it. But the filmmaking was beautiful of it, and the score was just stunning. And so I just love that. But yeah, the score, you know.
And you voted for that movie? You voted for that movie to win for score?
I have like 10 more minutes. And so we're at the first round now. So we do one round, and we rate everything 1 to 10. Then we go back and we deliberate. So when I, you know, next season, I'll tell you how it went down. But I think I'm going to have – say that I think it should move forward. I don't know if it'll end up winning, but it'll move forward, I think.
Well, not if it's such a difficult movie to get through that you're watching it in bits and pieces.
I am. Yeah. I am. But it's kind of nice. It's kind of liberating to be like, I don't have to really I just have to listen to it, you know? And so, but it's a really nice score. And it's what the other people on the jury with me, I think we're on a little tangent, sorry, but the other, like most of them are musicians.
That's what we're here for, Dana. We're here to go on tangents.
Yeah, most of the people are musicians. And then there's several of us who are filmmakers. And so it's interesting. I think we're all coming from it from a different perspective. Like, you know, the musicians were saying, oh, we're going to vote it on three criteria, which are, you know, like the production value, the composition, and how it serves the story. And for me, I just really care about how it serves the story. That's the only thing so that's circling all the way back to what you just started with, which was they're trying to serve the story by changing the tone of the music here. So, yeah.
Yes. Yes. And they do it well because they're getting us to the point where we're saying to ourselves, okay, you know what, maybe they're going to be having some somber moment here. What are they going to be talking about?
Yeah. And I think it's important.
You know, for those people, unlike us who haven't seen the movie before, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it's, or don't know what to expect.
It's important too to like figure out, like as a filmmaker, whether you want that to be subtle, whether you want people. I think here it's pretty subtle. I mean, if I'm remembering it correctly, like it doesn't like hit you over the head. Like, okay, I got a note to self. It's gonna, you know, the tone here is changing. So it's subtle. So it's good. But sometimes, you know, oftentimes in other movies, especially action movies, like if you ever, like if somebody in your house is ever watching a movie and you're kind of in the other room, you could tell when there's something scary going to come up or or tension filled coming up because you could hear the music change, right? So it depends if you want it to be right. clobbered over your head like that, or if you want it to just be more, you notice it, but you're feeling a little more tense.
Yeah, I think they do it subtly here. I think so.
Yeah, me too.
Right. So then the two of them start getting into a conversation about this whole thing because, you know, so I'll go back. So Al says, "What the hell are you talking about, man?" And he goes, "Something had to get you off the street." He says, "What's the matter? You don't think jockeying papers across a desk is a noble effort for a cop?" And surprisingly, I don't think I've ever noticed this, but John basically says to him, "No." Meaning, I don't think that that's a noble effort for a cop.
Yeah.
Which is... which is a pretty big jab to him on this one.
Yeah.
And and as John's talking, he like pulls out a, you know, he's playing with his feet and we see he pulls out a large shard of glass from his foot and like just is looking at it. And I mean, I got to say that this whole conversation, John is doing a good job of distracting himself from the pain. You know, that's pretty much his goal here.
Yeah, and I also think it's interesting that, like, they're about to go into something pretty deep, right? But, like, there's still this, like, level of superficiality to this line still. You know, when he's saying you don't think it's, you know, you don't think it's noble to be a paper pusher, like, he's still going along that superficial, like, jabbing fun talk, and then soon it's going to take a turn.
But I think also part of it is that you know, he's having this conversation in order to not have to think about what it is that he's doing right now.
Right.
And what's great about it is that he does it really well. So I decided to actually look up like things that people do in order to distract themselves from pain and stuff like that. And I found a whole article about this, which I found was really fascinating. It gives like 20 different examples of things that you can do in order to distract yourself from pain. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to quickly go through them because we're not going to go into detail about any of them, unless there's something that stands out by you that you think is really interesting. So you have counting, breathing deeply, blowing bubbles. That's a strange one. You know, like, you know, you have the little container, you know, with the wand in the circle, and you pull it out and you blow bubbles. Okay. There's a thing called the alphabet challenge. Okay. You can listen to music and the alphabet challenge. Okay. The alphabet challenge, what basically you're supposed to do is you pick a letter of the alphabet and then a topic, and you write a list of everything that you can name starting with that letter. You know, for instance, if you were to say the letter L and the topic was food, so then you would say, okay, all the different foods that I can think of that start with L.
Oh, that sounds like what we do in our car rides with my kids.
Okay. So you're distracting them from the pain of having to drive across. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Listening to music, possibly listening to like an audiobook, reading. Sometimes people will just tap their fingers. Some people will draw. Some people will make crafts or models or things like that. You can possibly just, you know, walk around and talk. You can do like arts and crafts things by constructing, you know, different things. You can watch TV. You can have like a stress ball. You can write things. You can do puzzles. You can do what's known as imagination walks. Do you know what that is?
No.
Okay, so it's like you would picture yourself in a certain situation and try to remember what happened using all of your senses.
Oh, that's fun.
You know, for example, if you're at the beach, you might hear the sound of the waves, smell the salty air, feel the warmth of the sand beneath your feet, see the swimmers, you know, out in the water, taste the food you brought for a picnic lunch and things like that.
That's fun.
You can massage yourself, possibly massaging your hands or your feet in order to try and help you relax. You could play a game called What's in My World, which is basically you notice five things that you can see, hear, feel, smell, or taste around you. And the most common one that people use is they play with their phone, apps. I think the younger generation has gotten that one down pat. You know, there's an easy way to just ignore everything, including pain. Just
Exactly.
take your phone and what? Huh? You're talking to me?
Yeah.
What? What'd you say?
What about like banging your, like I always heard if like you can only have pain in one location. So what if you like pinch your hand or like slam a rock on your foot?
It's not listed on this website,
Really?
but it is possible.
Yeah.
I have heard that too.
Yeah.
So I would agree that that is definitely a possibility that one can try and do that. You know, but again, John, what John is doing here, he's just having a talk. You know, he's changing the conversation.
Right.
And
Just
that's pretty much
run-of-the-mill
what they're
distraction.
doing.
Yep.
Yeah. And especially when you look at the size of those pieces of glass that he's pulling out of his feet, he definitely must be in a lot of pain.
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, that thankfully it's not overly graphic, so
Right.
it's fine.
Yeah. There's that
You
like
know,
nice
it could
blood
be better.
splotch on the wall. That's fun.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Like
Yeah.
I was gonna bring that up. Like, where is that blood splotch from? You know, it can't be from his foot because I don't think he put his foot up there. You know,
Yeah.
so like where is that blood from? Was it already there in the bathroom beforehand?
Yeah.
Well, I
Funny.
Right. So like I said, he's doing a good job of distracting himself here. But I also have a problem with this conversation where John basically says that he doesn't think that, you know, pushing papers, jacking papers across the desk is a noble effort for a cop because, you know, as you know, and as what most of us know, you know, there, you know, people who are part of support staff are extremely important, sometimes even more important in whatever field of work that you're doing. I mean, if you talk about you know, in the medical field or in the police field or even in movies, you
Yeah.
know, when you're making a movie, you know, the idea of having, you know, support staff, people that can do certain things that are good at doing those particular tasks, you know, that works well. You
Yeah.
don't need to do everything yourself. So,
Yeah.
you know, I think this is probably one of the first times I can say that I don't agree with something John says. You know, most of the time he's very agree. It's easy to agree with what he's saying and what he's doing. But this is, I don't know, even just this no to me is going slightly too far.
I mean, but he's an ego, manly man cop. Like, I could imagine there's a lot of bravado and there's a differentiation between people out doing the real work. You know, I can imagine that
Yeah, for
in his
sure,
character. Yeah.
but part of the idea is that he should know that he can't do everything himself.
Yeah.
You
He's
know,
just, ra I
that
think he's
it's not
razzing.
helpful to him. Yeah, I mean,
Like,
you'd think that it
yeah.
would be helpful to him if he has to write up a report that you know, there's someone who can help him with that he doesn't have
Right.
to do it all himself.
Yeah.
You know, or an arrest report or all that stuff. But whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and then as you know, we see that he's like looking at this little shard of glass in his hand, and then he like flicks it. And we can actually hear the clink of it hitting the floor,
Huh, yeah.
which is great. You know, it shows that they did a really good ADR here in order
Yeah,
for us
sound effect,
to be
yeah.
able to hear that sound. You know, the whole idea of you know that you can hear a pin drop type of thing. You know, so
Right.
in this situation, you can hear the glass shard drop.
Right.
So,
That's cool.
yeah, I thought that was really well done. And then our Al answers him and says, I had an accident. So John, always making jokes of whatever situation he's in, says, the way you drive, I can see why.
Yeah.
What'd you do, run over your captain's foot with a car? And
Yeah.
like he gives that little chuckle there. And then Al, you know, gets more serious here and he goes, I shot a kid. He was 13 years old. It was dark. I couldn't see him. He had a ray gun. It looked real enough. You know, when you're a rookie, they can teach you everything about being a cop, except how to live with a mistake. Anyway, I just couldn't bring myself to draw my gun on anybody again. And I think, I mean, this minute tells us so much about Powell. You know, it shows that the humanity that he has, you know, that here he is, he's a cop, he wants to do his job, he wants to do things right, he wants to protect people. But because of this mistake that happened to him, you know, earlier in his career, you know, he's not able to to give up on the guilt of doing that, and therefore he, made a pledge to himself that, he doesn't never wants to put himself in that situation again, where he needs to make that type of choice, where there's even the slight possibility that his choice will be wrong.
Right.
So I think they deal with that pretty well.
Actually think it's really interesting that this big of a plot point comes so late in the movie. And it's like, everybody always liked him, like he's a very likable character. And then to add this like very much deeper level to him so late in the movie is really a very solid storytelling device. I was pretty impressed by that upon analysis.
Yeah, I mean, especially, no, you're right, especially considering the fact that we have, less than a half hour left of this movie.
Right, like to take the time to
Actually,
have
well,
that.
we have, right, we have slightly less than a half hour.
Yeah, I mean,
We have 20, 28 minutes left, I think.
really
Or no, sorry,
taking.
we have, no, sorry, we have 30, 31 minutes left.
Yeah, I mean,
So, yeah,
taking.
but it,
Yeah, I think it's really great to spend the time to develop that character just much more at that time is awesome.
right. I mean, as we know, since we've seen the movie, they're setting something up, but still, it helps develop the character even more, in a much broader way that we can look at it and say, wait a second, I can actually care about this guy more so than just, the fact that he's, likes to buy Twinkies and hums Christmas songs on, wherever he is. That type of thing. So yeah, I think they do a nice job of that, and I think you're right. Doing it this late in the movie is just helping to strengthen the bond between the two of them, and between the character of Al and the viewer from the same perspective. Even though it's late in the movie, we're getting this type of information about him.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No, I don't think so.
Actually, one other thing that I want to say. So, and whenever they show John, while he's fiddling around with his feet and taking out the shards of glass and stuff like that, he does a great job of showing that he's apparently in a lot of pain. We can see it on both a physical and emotional level with the combination here, because he has the physical pain of taking out the shards of glass, but he also has the emotional pain of having to hear this story from Al and feeling all the sympathy to Al. So I think the combination of those two things is done really well.
Yeah, and it's a really cool shot. Like he's in both the mirror and yeah, they're all really cool shots. I mean, if you think about it, like the smoke all around the exterior and the police scene, and then he's for a lot of the minute he's in two shots, in the one in the mirror, one himself. The blood, I mean, every spot of that frame is filled really with him. It's great.
Now, why would a director do that, to give us the shot of seeing him both in the mirror and, on the outside? Like, what from a director's perspective, what does that add?
I mean, I guess I would just say it's just a bit more interesting, right? There's not in a bathroom, there's not going to be that much opportunity for cool things, right? But so that's one op like a natural opportunity in a bathroom to, like you have a little blood. I mean, if you just look like everywhere you look, it's, there's a little blood on the left hand side and the tile, there's blood on the light, and then you have him. It just, I mean, and then you even have something, whatever that is, in the foreground on the far right side. It's just a very interesting shot. So I think it's just to keep it all very, tight and like using every last inch of the frame.
Could it be also that they're trying to show even more vulnerability to John because we see him from every angle possible? Okay. No, I was just guessing. I don't know enough about these things.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Yeah, it does give you another perspective for sure. I'd say yes.
Because basically there are four mirrors, because there's a mirror behind him, and then there's the mirror on the side of him. So we get to see, you know, four John McClanes.
Yep.
In this particular shot.
Yep. Yeah, it's really neat.
So okay. All right, cool. All right, so the script, it has some minor changes between what's in the final shot, the final version of the movie, and what's in the script. First of all, I like this. I like reading off the descriptive aspects of the script, you know, in order to explain, you know, the direction of what's supposed to be happening and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So McClane at the end of on Friday basically said to Al, what got you off the street? Are you what got you off the street, Al? You liked lousy coffee or what? You know, he doesn't mention the flat feet. And then it continues. It says, Powell doesn't answer right away. At the same time, McClane swallows, seeing a gleam inside his foot. He gingerly probes and pulls out a shard of glass, almost 3 inches long, from its angled gash. His mouth twisted in a silent scream all the way. So, you know, they're able to point out, you know, even in the script, that he's dealing with, you know, what he's doing while he's, you know, waiting for this response from Al. And then Al responds and says, I realized I couldn't do what I had to do anymore, at least not out there. I had an accident. McClane throws the glass across the room, forehead bathed in sweat. McClane weakly says, the way you drive, I can see why. Powell, beat, serious, I shot a kid. Realizing what he's hearing for the first time, McClane's face shifts to a new kind of pain. Powell, 11 years ago, oh, it was dark. He was big for his age. The damn ray gun he had looked real enough. Yeah, I had all the right excuses, but afterwards, I really couldn't draw my gun again. So it's a different way of telling the story,
mm-hmm.
but I think that they tell it better in the final script.
Yep.
And I think we get enough emotion from Al that it makes a lot of sense the way that he does it here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right. So before we get into our Monday segment, I actually found, you know, we were talking at the beginning of this minute about the spell check thing. So mm-hmm. I actually found the joke. So I'm just going to quickly read it. It says, my teacher told me not to worry about spelling because in the future there will be autocorrect. And for that, I am eternally grapefruit.
That's cute.
Yes. All right. So every Monday we have a segment called Die Hard on a Monday, where my guest will give their top five Die Hard doppelganger films. So Dana, what have you got for us?
Okay. So I've realized after doing this with you a few times, I have issues with like remembering from long time ago movies. So my thoughts are usually more current. So
okay. Current is good.
Like five. The number, like they're all the same level or 5 to 1 or 1 to 5? How do you like it?
No, 5 to 1. 5 to 1.
Okay, so my number one. Okay. So I would say.
Start with 5.
All right. I would say Con, I don't know, Con Air and Speed are tied for 5 and 4. Then I would say London Has Fallen because. I just won't even go into why. And then Olympus Has Fallen. And then Lethal Weapon. And then Home Alone. That would be my.
You just gave me six.
That's six. Oh, no. Okay, so let's take off. Oh, shoot. All right, let's take off. London Has Fallen.
London Has Fallen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that is fair.
Crazy.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
That's my list.
All right. Excellent. Yep. Thank you very much for that. So, Dana, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. My website is dananachman.com, dananachman.com. I'm on Instagram, Dana Nachman, I think. Yeah, it's the best.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to the show. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. Or you can go directly to my website, movierobminute.com. So, Dana, you want to come back again tomorrow? Talk a little bit more about Die Hard, John, Al,
Sure.
emotional trauma.
Absolutely.
All right, great. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.